Mario's Sunday Roast on Today FM with Mario Rosenstock.
Welcome back to Mario's Sunday Roast. And the winner of the hosier competition is Emma Byrne in Carlow. Well done, Emma. And you correctly answered that, of course, hosier's first name is Andrew. And thanks to everybody who entered and good luck. Now, tomorrow night, myself and the entire Sunday Roast team, well, the executive of the Sunday Roast team, Patrick and Ruth and myself, I don't think Stephen is coming. We're going out to see a show at the Workman's Club as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival. It's a one-man show written by and starring a very funny man, Tig Hickey, who is in this room now. Hi, Tig.
Hi, Mario. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, you're welcome. And he's also a member of the very funny Cahoots comedy troupe from Cork, but playing all over the country, betimes. Look them up on YouTube. They're really funny. Ian Dempsey's a great champion of them as well and retweets them constantly. Tig has been on the Sunday Roast panel a couple of times. And not surprisingly, every time he's on, we've had texts coming in from people going, who's your man? He's really funny. Ah, that's Tig. He's a legend. Everybody knows him. And so anyway, Tig is in studio today, not only to tell us about his new one-man show, which previewed last night and we're going to go to see tomorrow, but also because we believe it is a really fascinating story, and we'd like to sit down with him and go through it today. Tig, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much,
not as a panelist, but as a storyteller, which is what you are.
Yeah.
Tell everybody about your new show. What's it called, and broadly, what's it about?
Okay, so it's called In One Eye, Out the Other, and it's a story of a guy called Fergal who's had this impossibly painful past, is an active alcoholic, has been through horrific things, is going through horrific things, but is really chipper and positive about the whole thing. So he's really kind of happy-go-lucky about it. So you're presented with this kind of, I just thought there was something very interesting in somebody going through a horrific time and being very chipper about it. And also, I thought there was something interesting in exploring alcoholism from the other angle, really, because a lot of the depictions on TV and film that I've experienced are kind of universally painful and gritty. And I just thought there's a whole lot more to it. So I suppose I would understand alcoholism intimately myself, shall we say. And
so, Tig, you're an alcoholic.
Well, look, I like to drink. Yeah, I suppose. And...
Now, one of the things we found really interesting about this story, or I found interesting about this story, is the way you've regarded your past, the way you look upon your past, and the way it reflects on your future. So I don't think you're one to say, for example, oh, these were bad times and these were dark times.
No, I find it very odd when people who don't drink anymore describe drink as evil or anything like that. I just don't, it's just... And I'd only speak for myself here now, of course, but like I don't find anything evil about inanimate objects generally, right? So it was a combination of alcohol and me together. Again, I wouldn't use the term evil, but we got into trouble together, like me and alcohol. But I'm very conscious that most people drink socially and have great time with it. And I don't drink now for 4 years. When I'm around people that are drinking for social lubrication or whatever, I love being in their company. Like, it's great crack. So I'm only talking for myself and I suppose the people who may be listening who realize they might have had an issue with alcohol. Like, it's a smaller group, but like, you know, and for them it's a different experience. Like, you will know at some stage, I certainly knew quite early on, oh, this is quite different for me, like, you know what I mean? My buddies are kind of going out and having a laugh and we're active or whatever, and then they're getting up, they're going to work. Yeah. I was kind of stopping doing that stuff quite early on, you know?
I'm not going to go down the Pat Kenny route where I go, so Tig, how bad did it get? Hello, did you go? Hello, no, lower. I'm not going to go there. Because
you can get very sad, like, if you want.
You can get very sad, but you can get very funny as well, because you were a party boy in Cork.
Yeah, totally.
Tell us about that kind of existence.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, that's it. I mean, those first few years, particularly in my 20s, I mean, it was just nonstop crack. You know what I mean? And even though I knew there was an issue there, I was still having the time of my life. Do you know what I mean? As long as I could kind of get away with it, it was great crack. I mean, I don't know how many stories, like... You know, there was a time, one time where I was a contestant on Eurostar, if you remember that show from years ago.
And As a singer.
Yeah. Do a bit of singing. And I got a bit of hassle from a local ruffian about my appearance on it. He was kind of implying there was something going on between myself and Louis Walsh. So I thought after 12 or 13 pints, it would be a good idea to call to his house and talk it through with him and his mom and his big brothers. Yeah. And so I called up to his house and he rightly beat me out the door, like, and I ended up in CUH in an ambulance. And went in there, struck up a great thing with this Indian doctor, getting on, great crack, high fives, great buddies. And I was just kind of saying what a great guy he was as I was walking out the door. I was like, oh, nice man, cheers, thanks again, see you again sometime. And fell and went over my ankle and straight back in Taney. met the same doctor about 2.5 hours later.
Out of hospital and into hospital again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like there was I mean there was so much crack. There was like I was in a house one time in Cork at a party and heavy drinking, totally blacked out. And at the time I was going through a serious penchant for makeup, and myself and my buddy, we kind of target people that would have, you know, be skillful with the old brush and the blusher and I got a full face of makeup on, and I came to in Galway. I'd been driven up to Galway just about to go on stage because I was in a band at the time called Eggs Pursued by a Bear. If any of the lads are listening, what they went through with me is no one's business. And so I just came to full face of makeup just about to go on stage and looking at lads kind of going, you know, do we want to help this guy or do we want to beat him up, like, you know? So that was it. That was my 20s.
And were you able to function on blackout? Because, I mean, this is an interesting thing about some people who drink heavily, that they can actually function, walk, talk, argue, abuse, laugh while in blackout.
Like, I'm not being melodramatic now, but I could have a day, I could have a full day that I wouldn't be able to remember at all. Like, and that day could be live theatre. At one point, it was live TV. I was doing a kids' show years ago. Probably better not name the show.
Jesus, not kids' show, were you?
Yeah. And like, yeah, and it's not something I'm at all proud of,
no.
Obviously, but I think it's probably worth saying, like, that's the, I mean, for people as well, they're kind of like, would you not just cop yourself on, or would you not just, like, it's quite an insidious thing, like, when it gets a hold on you, you just find ways to manage all the time, so I could keep things kind of going up to a point, but like, yeah, I would have been in a blackout, and later on that afternoon, the next day, I'd be like, oh my God, I did a show yesterday, like.
Mm.
You know, it was kinda...
You weren't drinking all the time. It was binge drinking, wasn't it?
I'd be off it for ages and I'd kind of like build up. Oh, months on end. Like, I stopped drinking during my leaving cert. I was so aware of it so early. I was like, I need to stop in periods to do things. Like, so if I was finishing my degree, I'd stop. If I had a big work thing coming up, I'd stop. But then just at inopportune times, you'd kind of just go back on it. You just get this notion to go. And I'd kind of take the first drink, I suppose, and I could feel kind of control leaving my body, like.
Here, you have a great quote about it here, because you wrote something for us in preparation for this interview, and it was really interesting reading. And one of the sentences that I marked was, I could almost feel as the first pint or can went down, control leaving my body and spirit. Alcohol was going to tell me when this particular session was finished with me, not the other way around.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, because you almost personify alcohol as a thing, a person, an entity almost, that we used to call... You know, the idea of the fear. I used to see this thing as the fear, as a 64-year-old man called Jerry, who was like a big fat taxi driver who suddenly would end up on my couch opposite me on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And I'd kind of wake up on the couch and opposite me would be Jerry, and he'd go, you're not going anywhere today.
Yeah, exactly.
You're staying with me, and I'll be staying a couple of days. And it was always terrifying.
Yeah.
But,
it was that kind of sense of I kind of, as soon as it kicked off again, you're kind of going, and actually the people around me as well, I would relinquish control to them. I'd be like, you'll probably have to look after me now at this point, because I just didn't know what I was going to do or where I was going to end up, you know? Like, I was, the kind of, the really insidious thing about my drinking as well, and everyone's obviously quite different, I was always having great crack. So even though the years were getting quite, in the bleak years when I was out, I was still having immense crack. It's just that I couldn't stop. So it's not like I was drunk and I was like beating people up or, you know, like kind of chasing after people's wives and stuff.
But I guess it was slowly. Yeah. Okay, let's not go there.
but generally speaking, I wouldn't have had the kind of headline grabbing drama. Like, you know, I wasn't really involved with the police much or whatever. But like, it was just a kind of thing of like, oh, I can't stop. And now it's Tuesday and I'm in a park and I don't know who these people are. Do you know that kind of way? Like, and it really was that was what was so insidious about it. Because when I'd stop again, I'd be like, sure, I'm great crack. And even people I'd be with, they'd be like, you know, you don't really get into that much trouble. You're probably like, I was in a full-time job of convincing either myself or the people around me that I could kind of control it again. That was like an obsession, because I came from a family of, there's some people in my family just drank and they had great crack and then they got up and went to work. That was my undying obsession to become like somebody who could just go out and have a few pints, get up and get on with his life. But I was unable to do it as time went on.
Okay, well, we're going to take your first clip, Tadhg. So anybody who does a profile on this show, we ask them to pick three things, kind of a speech or maybe a movie scene, some comedy and maybe a hero figure. And for a speech or movie scene, you've chosen something which I think is very apt indeed. What is it and what's it from?
It's from With Nail and Lie, which is probably a bit of an obvious choice for a problem drinker, but I just think the dialogue in that film is, I haven't seen anything like it since, to be honest. And I think in this scene, the two lads are on the absolute lash and they've just gotten really wasted and they go into a cafe to have some cake to soak up the booze.
What do you want in here?
Cake. What's it got to do with you?
I happen to be the proprietor. Now, would you leave?
Ah, I'm glad you're the proprietor.
What do you want?
I'm going to have a word with you anyway. Cake. What's it got to do with you?
What do you want in here? I happen to be
Cake.
The proprietor.
What's it got to do with you?
Now, would you leave? You're drunk.
Just bring out the cake. Cake and fine wine.
If you don't leave, we'll call the police.
Balls. We want the finest wines available to humanity. We want them here, and we want them now.
Miss Blenner has it. Telephone the police.
It's all right. Miss Blenner has it. I'm warning you, if you do, you're fired. We are multi-millionaires. We shall buy this place and fire you immediately.
Yes, we'll buy this place. And we'll install a fucking jukebox in here. Life and all you stiffs up a bit.
The police, Miss Blenner, has it. Just say there are a couple of drunks in the Penrith tea rooms and we want them removed.
We are not drunks. We are multi-millionaires.
Hurry up, Mabs. We'll keep them here till they arrive.
You won't keep us anywhere. We'll buy this place and have it knocked down.
Right.
Please.
Right. We're going. Our car's arrived.
The amazing With Neil and I, such a joy to, I don't know what used to grab us when we were in our early 20s, wasn't it, as a student kind of film. Have we ever kicked out of an establishment for being a little inebriated?
I was barred from 3 bars in Cork in one afternoon, one time.
Mm.
Yeah, I kept throwing my jacket down and starting fights with people that weren't there. So, yeah, so that's at some point they were just like, this isn't going to work really for us today. Bye.
Tig, stay with me. I'm going to take a quick commercial break and I'm going to come back and talk to you more after this.
Mario Sunday Roast on Today FM with Mario Rosenstock.
And you're with Mario's Sunday Roast, and I'm here in the middle of listening to the fascinating story of Tig Hickey, who has created and starring in the show In One Eye and Out the Other, which we're going to see tomorrow night as part of the Dublin Fringe Festival. And it tells his own story, or kind of his own story, kind of autobiographical. But Tig, when you were, like, you were drinking really, really heavily, okay, at this point now, what time, what age were you kind of then when it reached a kind of turning point? And if so, what was the turning point?
Yeah, I suppose it was kind of early 30s, really. I kind of just found myself, like, still, like, I was really patchy at everything, you know? That was became really clear to me. I was, like, a patchy father. I loved my daughter so much. I wasn't kind of as good as I think I should have been. Definitely on the career front.
What's her name?
Like, Cuiva.
Cuiva.
Cuiva, yeah. Hi, Cuiva. With work, definitely the amount of work opportunities I let go is just no one's business. Like, because you can't fake it all the time. Like, you can get away with some stuff or whatever. And yeah, it was all just, I just wanted it to finish really. Like I think the last year of my drinking particularly, without getting really dark, whatever, I really felt like the mask of alcoholism kind of dropped or something. You know, I really saw that I was dealing with something that was much bigger than me, and it was taken out, like I had taken out much better people than I was, and it was bigger than me. And I just needed to stop. And I just kind of surrounded myself with people that were stopping, but crucially as well, were stopping and wanted active, better lives afterwards, like not to just stop drinking and sit on your hands really frustrated that your kind of anesthetic had been taken away from him, you know? It was important for me to look beyond drinking and see what else is there, and also to look before it to see why, you know, why was I drinking like in this kind of chaotic style or whatever.
And why were you? It's a really hard question to answer. I have answers for it myself. Not why you did it.
Would you just please let me know then? Like,
I had a couple of people who were keeping an eye on you, Tig, and they thought the whole counseling. Story, and I can tell you what the word is in one word. It was shame, Tig. Shame. But here it is. It actually is the word shame.
Yeah.
I think shame. I think we're all ashamed.
Mm.
I think we're all ashamed, and some of us deal better with our shame than others.
Totally.
And I think it all goes back to shame and being ashamed of who you are, really. And
I found as well, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I also found as well that I know this sounds really cheesy and a topic probably for the roast, but I didn't really feel at peace with myself, you know? Like there was a kind of for me, and again, most people don't drink for this reason. Most people drink to have a laugh, but some people drink because they just feel uncomfortable. Like they actually want to make them, they're actually like, I think, using it to manage anxiety, you know? And then you have 2 or 3 pints in and everyone's great crack, we're having a great night. Whereas you were in bits on the way into the night out going, how am I going to manage this evening? Do you know, and I definitely relate to that. But then I'd have like another 20 points on top of that kind of thing, you know. So like when I found, again, a bit cheesy, like, but I started meditating and I found a route in through transcendental meditation. I just copied Jerry Seinfeld because he was doing it, basically, comedy hero. And since I've done that and I've hung around with people that want to get well or whatever, I've kind of just found this kind of peace, whatever, that now makes it seem to me I don't even know why I was drinking to begin with. I know that, again, sounds a bit whatever, but I feel I almost have a secret now. You know, that like you're out, you don't actually need substances. They actually get in your way of having a good night at times if you have that kind of inner peace. Now, I know I actually hate listening to myself at the moment. I would roast this man to death. Like, but
you know, we could absolutely make this an even more beautiful piece, finish you off entirely. Let's just bring Brezzy in and let's talk about your mental health. We can turn into that radio program now, Tig, if you want to. I can push that button.
I'd love to see Brezzy.
I can call Brezzy right now.
Do it, man.
He's under the table.
Do it.
Brezzy, get up here. Listen, we're going to move on to your hero, because again, the hero again is just a classic. Go on.
Cliche.
No, it is a classic.
Yeah, well, like, so my hero, I suppose, like, so I was pictured a scene. I'm in school. I'm like a spotty, chubby teenager, and my sister, Deborah. Hi, Deborah. Gets me into the Doors and Jim Morrison, and my head just goes, like, I mean, this guy just seems to epitomize everything that I wasn't and I wanted to be, you know, like this kind of like the daring nature of it, like hand him anything, hand him a drink, he swallows it, like incredibly the prowess with women, but then the poet on top of it. So he's not just a womanizer, like brainless womanizer, he's this artist and, you know, this incredible, you know. So that for me was the full package, whatever. And yeah, I wanted part of it. And if he was an alcoholic, which became very clear as you read No One Here Gets Out Alive, I think it's called, by Danny Sugarman, halfway through that you're like, obviously, okay, he's an alcoholic. Then I'm like, part of me is like, well, I think I'd like to be an alcoholic. Yeah. Do you know, I mean, I think my 14 or 15 year old brain probably thought that, like, you know. It's so intoxicating, because if you think that's what the image is, but I suppose we weren't hanging around with Jim Morrison during days where he was in bits, like, which he obviously was, like, he was this kind of tortured soul, but I just bought into the film clips of him, like, this incredible, like, body and, like, women everywhere and rock poetry and stuff, you know, but obviously he had massive demons himself.
Yeah. Now, Ty, it's Riders in the Storm in the background, yeah. Ty, tell me about the sort of the genesis of your play, then, In One Eye, Out the Other.
Yeah, so
you started it when you were drinking.
I was drinking, yeah. So I used to make these audio notes on my laptop. So that's how I'm not sure how you write comedy, right? But I very rarely actually write stuff down if it's for stand-up. I record and re-record and whatever. So I started off, that character must be like this guy Fergal from In One Eye, Out the Other, like 5 years ago, I'd say. And I was still drinking. So I'd make little clips of the character, but then I'd intersperse them with clips of myself. And I'd be actually rehearsing with, I'd have a can in my hand, like, I know it sounds kind of a bit bleak now, but... Yeah. And I'd actually record bits of myself when I felt like I was about to go back out drinking, and I would kind of try to record stuff to kind of convince myself maybe not to go, or to remind myself of the pain. Because, you know, the way pain has no memory. Because I would, like, I was murdered for shrugging off pain. I'd be in this horrendous state after a binge. And then about a week later, I'm like, I'm class, I'm grand, I can manage this again, I'm unreal. And then I'd be back on my merry-go-round again. So I used to make these clips to kind of talk myself and to talk myself through the fears that I was having of, like, where's this going to lead? So this character came out of a place when I was drinking into kind of recovery, and now I feel kind of somewhat out the other side of it, whatever. So it's obviously, yeah, it's kind of a special, he's definitely a special character to me, I suppose.
But it seems to me as well that just reading the stuff you wrote, that the play and the act of writing and the act of being funny and the act of performing has become the new drink. It's become not even the new drug, it's become a really great release and peace away from that.
Totally. And it's a massive catharsis, like, of course, like, it's my way of dealing with it. Again, and you'll see in the show now tomorrow night, it's not a gritty story. It's absolutely off the wall. There's no way these things could have happened. I've taken like 5 or 10% truth and then brought like this surreal kind of story to it, whatever. And that's my way of dealing with the story, rather than sitting down and kind of going, and then this bad thing happened to me, and then this bad thing happened to me, you know? So that was kind of my route in. But definitely the experience of writing the show and doing stuff with Cahoots in the last few years and stuff, I'd love just to, you know, if I could say anything to somebody who's like a problem drinker and they're young or whatever, I had that feeling where I realised that I was a problem drinker. I was kind of thinking, when I stop now, like, my life is kind of over, and like nothing could be further from the truth. Like, you know, like if you get that little bit of peace between the ears and you kind of start engaging with, like, the creativity that comes from stopping drinking is no one's business, because it's getting in your way. Like, for me, it was dumbing. I thought I was so creative when I was drunk, like, sure, I was just a mess. I was just falling around the place. Like, the creativity happens when you take that thing away and you actually start to kind of foster the stuff that's going around you that hasn't been able to get out because the alcohol's been blocking it. Mm. That was my experience anyway.
And it's interesting what you said about binge drinking as well there, because, like this happened to me as well, especially in my early 30s.
Okay.
Like, I drink a lot, right? And then this tremendous, obviously talked about the fear and the depression, the anxiety, and then it would wear off. And I remember counting the days it was usually about 5 to 6 days before I started feeling even better than ever I felt before when I'm sober.
Yeah.
And believe me, I came up with a completely horrific theory at one point to keep the cycle of, oh, come on, I'm just having fun here with some, you know, a little bit of heavy drinking. That the more I did the heavy drinking, the better the good buzz was going to be 5 days after.
God.
Because I began to feel almost this you'd be on Monday, you'd be sort of sad. On Tuesday, you'd be, you know, just getting better. On Wednesday, you'd be a bit sticky. On Thursday, you'd be frisky. And on Friday, you'd be...
I'm in love.
On Friday, I'm in love with myself, with the world and everybody around me. I felt I was on drugs.
Yeah.
And then that feeling led to, I feel like going out.
Absolutely. It's mad now you're saying that, because I had that exact experience. I taught myself that this is just the way I go. You know, I do this binge because I need to go this low in order to have the gratitude and perspective of my mind and body coming round again.
Okay.
Because you will convince yourself of anything, like, just to keep doing what you love doing.
Well, comedy, is you will. And comedy is one of the things you love doing. And Cahoots are a great comedy troupe. And I've enjoyed very much watching them. And I'd love to see them live. And I'm going to see you tomorrow night. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Thank you so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
It's brilliant. And comedy is what you do. And you love comedy. And you don't love all sorts of comedy. In your notes, you wrote you love cerebral comedy. You love Ricky Gervais. But you love the Dumbelievables as well.
They almost be my favourite back in the day, because they had it all really, because they had this kind of fun. It was fun and it was silly and you could identify with it, but then it was really dark underneath everything, you know, and it was like the two lads firing off each other in this kind of dark way. I thought was amazing. Remember, like, John Kenny having a character at a wedding one time, the kind of drunk uncle who's kind of, you know, all the family and friends and stuff, and it was like this piece of drama in the middle of the comedy, you know. It was this full character. I just thought that was amazing, yeah.
Yeah, he was on last week,
John. Yes, yeah, he's great.
And I love watching comedy, which goes from being comedy to being serious all of a sudden, and you don't know which space you're meant to be in.
Exactly.
Which discombobulates you slightly.
Yes.
But the piece we've picked is another great comedian, Stuart Lee. Now, in fairness, he is a little bit of a comedian's comedian.
Mm.
And when I say that, I mean he is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
But he's not Michael McIntyre,
no.
And he isn't for everybody. And I love his stuff, but his stuff, sometimes you go on YouTube and you see his little routines go on 7 or 8 minutes, and we can't do that on the show.
Yeah.
So we've picked a little bit of Stuart Lee talking about his pants and how his wife buys them for him.
If you've been married for a long time, you will find your partner ceases to view you as a sexual being. I've been married 10 years now. Now, 9 years ago, I've been married 1 year, and I went off on tour, and while I was on tour, I ran out of pants. Now, like a lot of men, I don't really know where my pants come from. I always seem to have loads, but I don't remember ever having bought any. So I bought some pants in Lincoln, went home, 1 year of marriage, new pants, and my wife said to me, oh, you've bought new pants, are you having an affair? A sort of sarcastic way, which was funny, but it was also nice because it suggested in her mind I was still a sexual possibility. See what I mean? Now, last year, I've been married 10 years, I went off on tour, I ran out of pants, and I bought some new pants in Bovey Tracy, and I got back to London, 10 years of marriage, new pants, and my wife said to me, oh, you've bought new pants, did you shit yourself at work? I mean, I had done, but it was a coincidence.
The dark, uncomfortable comedy of Stuart Lee. And of course, he slags off the people who come and see him as well. Because he kind of goes, you're only here to see me because you want to be, think people think you're intelligent,
absolutely,
don't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
You're the head nodders, aren't you? You're the eyebrow raisers, aren't you? Ooh, that was very subtle, Stuart, aren't you? I hate you too.
Yeah.
I hate you too. I don't like you either. Listen, Tig, it's been brilliant. Brezzy hasn't come back to us, by the way, so he doesn't want to know about
buddy
you.
Buddy Brezzy.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, listen, I want to thank you for coming in and tell us your story.
No problem.
And the thing about you is you're a very funny person and a great, great performer, but you were able to come in and just talk pretty candidly about this and how it relates to your new show. And your show is called One In One Eye, Out the Other. And it's on tomorrow night in the Workman's Club.
Yeah. And for the rest of the week, except Thursday until Saturday. At 9 o'clock.
Yeah, and you will continue to play with Cahoots as well.
Yeah, we've got a gig coming up in Spike Island on the 27th of September. I've got to get my plug in for that or I'll be killed by Laura.
Ty Kickey, thank you very much for coming in to talk to me, and regards to Kiva at home. And that's it for this week's Sunday Roast. Thanks to all my guests, Ty Kickey, Larissa Nolan, the Bonnie Men, Keelan Moncrief and Owen Murphy. Thanks also to the Sunday Roast team, senior producer Patrick Coy, producer Ruth Tivani and Stephen McClune on sound. And of course, thanks to all of you for tuning in to the show and all your texts. Catch up on the best bits of the show in your own time on todayfm.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'll be back with Gift Grub on the Ian Dempsey Breakfast Show tomorrow morning. And again, right here in this very chair for another Mario's Sunday Roast. Next Sunday, thanks for being with us today. Have a great week, everybody.